Welcome everybody. Another day for beginners. Whenever I talk, I think of giving a talk or any kind of instruction to beginners. I try to think of those old days, long, long time ago, when I was a beginner. Because that is very important, you know. I read a poem written by a Japanese Zen monk. And that reminds me of the importance of thinking that once we were young. His poem has one line. He said, I was young once, long time ago. So if I talk to you from where I am now, maybe I might not understand the difficulty. So one friend also reminded me of that. So a few days ago, I was thinking of those days when I was a beginner. But even now, I'm still a beginner in some ways. The journey has not ended. I've come a long way, but I still have a long way to go. We are together. So when I was very young, trying to find out things, many things, ideas, philosophies, religions, reading many books, I came across a very small book. I don't remember where I got it, maybe from a bookstore. It was very cheap. In Burmese money, it cost me 1 chat. 1 chat in those days is about 20 cents. And I read the book. It really shook me. It was like an earthquake. And after I read it, I put it away for a while. And then when I got a chance, one holiday, I took the book and went up to the mountains again. Because whenever I want to think something very deeply, I went up the mountain, very quiet and peaceful, away from the city. This is very important. Distancing. Distancing is very important. The surrounding affects your thinking very much. If you go away to a very quiet and peaceful place, especially where there are nothing man-made, nature, you think and feel very differently. So I went away to that place in the mountains, and then I read the book very slowly again. Very, very slowly, reading each word, each sentence. And that little book is a translation of a sutra in 2 languages, Burmese and in English also. So very interesting. So I read in Burmese and then I read in English again. Later, I found the Pali original text and read it again and again. And then later, I translated the sutra again. Because I found the first translation not very bad, but not really accurate. But I translated that sutra with Udamendra in 1985. Not very long ago, 12 years ago. Because I like the sutra very, very much, and I still like the sutra. Now here is that translation of the sutra. So you might be wondering, what is that sutra? Why is he talking about this sutra without mentioning it? And I'm not going to mention the sutra. I will still keep you in suspense. Please, he'll torture you. Oh, he's not going to tell us. We have to wait. Yes, we have to wait. And when I talk about this sutra with another friend, who was also a free thinker, free thinker means he was not a member of any religious group. He was really freely investigating and finding out. So when I talked about this sutta with that friend, he said, I became a Buddhist and it cost me 20 cents. And he told me the same story, just what I did. He said, one day I was walking in Rangoon, and on the platform, on the sidewalk, and there was a display of second-hand books, many old books. So he was trying to find something interesting to read, and he found this little book. And he bought it for 20 cents. I mean, in Burmese money, it's one chat only. And he said after he read that book, he became a Buddhist. So to become a Buddhist, you don't need any ceremony, no priest necessary to make you a Buddhist. If you like the teaching and if you practice it, that's enough. No ceremony. No authority can make you a Buddhist. You don't need that. So much freedom, you see. And what is that book about? Well, if you can give me enough time to talk about it, I really want to talk about this book. It's a very small sutra, actually. Only 4 pages. So whenever I come and sit here and talk, I have 2 difficulties. One is difficulty in speaking English language. Another difficulty is not enough time. So I have time, and I want to ask you, do you have time? Can you listen for 1.5 hours? Because it's your time, actually. I come here because of you. You come here to listen and to Dharma talks about meditation and to meditate. So I'm willing to stay here as long as you need me. And if you allow me to talk for 1.5 hours, I want to talk about it in detail because I might not get another chance to talk with you about this matter, which is so important and interesting for me. So please be patient, and if you have to go, that's okay. And this sutra in Pali is called Kesa Mukti Sutra. It has 2 different names. Another name is Kalama Sutra. And I believe quite a few of you have read that sutra. Quite a few. But it's very important to read this sutra again and again and think very deeply. And put this idea in different context. And find out a deeper meaning. And see how you relate to that. Actually, it is not enough just to read an idea or just to listen to an idea. It is very important to live it, to feel it, to live it. That is very important. If you live it, then it can affect your life and it can change your life. So, I would like to read through some of the important sentences and explain and discuss the meaning with you, because for a beginner, not only for a beginner, for anybody who is looking for truth, looking for the right path, need to know this. This is the guidance that the Buddha laid down for anybody. So, in the introduction part, as usual, Venerable Ananda was reporting, thus have I heard. So, Venerable Ananda heard about this sutra from the Buddha because they made an agreement. So Ananda asked for some kind of favor from the Buddha. He said, wherever you teach a sutra, you must tell that about that sutra to me again. So Buddha agreed to that. So whenever Buddha talked about anything anywhere, when he comes back and meet Venerable Ananda, he will report to the Ananda, Ananda, I said this. They were brothers, very loving brothers, each other. Their relationship was very beautiful. So just to understand some of the things that they talk to each other, the way they relate to each other, how much they respect and love each other, teach me how to relate to another person too. So there are many, many things that we can take from the Pali text and really study and apply in our life. But that will come later. I can get digressed for an hour. So, in this sutta, at one time, the Blessed One, while traveling in the Kosala country, Kosala was a region, like a state, a big country actually, Kosala country, together with a large company of bhikkhus, had arrived at a market town of the Kalamas called Kesamutta. So the place is called Kesamutta, but the people who lived there was called Kalamas. Their clan name, the name of their clan, was Kalamas. The Kalamas of Kesamutta heard that indeed the recluse Gautama, so they call him a recluse, Samana. The recluse Gautama, the son of the Sakyans, who has gone forth from the Sakyan clan, has arrived at Kesamutta. Of that venerable Gautama, a good reputation has spread far and wide that this blessed one, having destroyed the mental defilements, is worthy of veneration. He has attained perfect enlightenment by himself. By himself, that's very important. He is perfect in knowledge and the practice of morality. Knowledge and morality. You see, the two together, this is also very important. Most people think that knowledge is important, morality doesn't matter. So, no, the two must go together. Knowledge and good behavior, morality. Those who don't behave well are not wise, no matter how much knowledge they have. So, one criterion or one way of testing whether a person is wise or not is to see how he behaves, whether he hurts himself or whether he hurts another being. He speaks only what is beneficial and true. Very important. You should not talk about everything you know. Useless. A lot of things that we know are not very useful. But so, it's important to talk about what is beneficial and true. So this is our translation, our interpretation of the words, the Pali words. He knows the world. He knows the people. He knows the environment also. The word world has many meanings. Sattaloka means the world of beings. And Sankhara Loka, the world of mental states, volitions, and Akasa Loka, the universe, the planets. So he knows the world means all that. He knows all these. He is the unsurpassable leader of men, fit to be tamed, fit to be taught. So those who are fit to be taught, he can teach them. So, you see, this is very important. If you are not fit to be taught, nobody can teach you. So many cases in the Pali Sutras, I found that people came to the Buddha and talked with him, and Buddha found that this person is not suitable to be taught. And they asked him questions, and he gave them the answer, but they couldn't understand the meaning. So if we are ready to learn, then somebody can help us, if we are fit to be taught. So Buddha did not teach everybody. This is very important to know. He is the teacher of devas and men. He is an enlightened one. He is the most fortunate possessor of the results of previous meritorious actions. He, having realized its nature by himself with the super knowledge, makes known this world with its devas, maras, brahmas, monks, recluses, and men. He teaches dharma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, complete in meaning and letter, and he shows the completely undefiled life of purity. Very important, completely undefiled life of purity. Truly, seeing an arhanta like that is profitable. To see somebody like that is very profitable, very useful. This is very important. You know, what inspired me to practice meditation was those people I met when I was young who practiced meditation and who were very calm and peaceful, very considerate, very generous, very kind, very compassionate. Some of them were laymen, some of them were monks. So to meet somebody like that, that really affects your life. So the best way to learn Dharma is from another person who is living it. The best way. But if you cannot find that sort of person, you can still learn some Dharma from reading books, from listening to Dharma tapes. So then the Kalamas of Kesamoto approached the place where the Blessed One was staying. Having approached that place, some having bowed, sat down in a suitable place. So some people bowed down to the Buddha and sat in his place. Some exchanged friendly greetings with the Blessed One. And having exchanged friendly greetings, they sat down in a suitable place. So how are you? How are you doing? That's a friendly greeting. That's also okay. You know, Buddha did not demand that everybody should come and bow down to him. He never demanded that sort of, how do you say that? That sort of respect or... Some, having raised their hands together in salutation in the direction of the Blessed One, sat down in a suitable place. They did not bow down, but they just put their hands together. And that also is enough. So some people ask me, shall I bow down to you? Not necessary. If you want to, it's okay. But if you don't want to, that's also okay, not necessary. Some, having announced their name and clan, sat down in a suitable place. So that is also an interesting point to remember, to think about it. To tell somebody your name and your clan name is a way of showing respect to. In those days, this was regarded as a showing of respect. I'm so-and-so, Venerable Sir, and my clan is so-and-so. So that means you make another person known to you. You let him know who you are. So if you don't tell that person your name or your clan name, that means you are closed. You are not friendly. So to tell somebody else your name is a sign of friendliness. While thus sitting, the Kalamas of Kesamoto spoke thus to the Blessed One. And here comes a very, very important point. So, for beginners, this is very important. I think you can relate to that, because I felt that way too when I was young. I was exposed to many different religions, because in the city where I was born, there were Muslims and Christians and Hindus and Buddhists, maybe some other religious groups too, and I went to a Christian Roman Catholic school. So I was exposed to many different religious ideals. And when I grew up, I started reading books. I read all kinds of philosophies, got very, very confused. Fit to be confused. The more you read, the more you get confused. So here comes the important point. There are, Venerable Sir, some recluses and Brahmins who come to Kesamoto. So some recluses and Brahmins, groups, they come to this place. I think this place, which is called Kesamoto, must be in some ways very much like Melbourne. Think about it and see if you can find some similarities. So, some recluses and Brahmins who come to Kesamoto, they explain and illuminate their own views, but the views of others they attack. So many people coming with many different religious ideals, and they explain their own ideals and they attack others' ideals. So they explain and illuminate their own views, but the views of others they attack, look down upon, treat with contempt, and tear apart. So think about it. People do that. Groups with different ideals, they attack each other. Some other recluses and Brahmins also come to Kesamudra, and they also explain and illuminate their own views, but the views of others they attack, look down upon, treat with contempt, and tear apart. About these recluses and Brahmins, this doubt and uncertainty really arises in us. So many different groups, so many different ideas. So if you listen to all the groups, surely you'll feel just the way those people in those days, those Kalamas felt. So about these recluses and Brahmins, this doubt and uncertainty really arises in us. Who among these venerable recluses has spoken the truth and who falsehood? Who is right and who is wrong? Because they cannot be all right. Some people say, oh, all the same. Every path leads the same to the same goal. No, it cannot be. Think very honestly. So who is right and who is wrong? Very confusing. Doubt. So Buddha said, indeed, it is proper for you to be doubtful and uncertain. In a doubtful matter, uncertainty has arisen. Because it is a doubtful matter, there's uncertainty. So here also, in this great country, you are exposed to all kinds of ideals and ideas, religious, political, philosophical, scientific. So Buddha said, come you, Kalamas, not because of repeated hearing, not because of tradition, nor because of hearsay, nor because it agrees with the text, nor because it is logical, nor because of inference, nor because of careful consideration of reasons, nor because it conforms with your own view, nor because of thinking this person appears to be trustworthy, nor because of thinking this recluse is our teacher. But when you, Kalamas, know by yourselves, that is an important point, these actions are unwholesome, these actions are blameworthy, these actions are censured by the wise, these actions, if completely undertaken, lead to harm and pain, then you, Kalamas, should abandon those actions. So I read through the whole paragraph, but let's think about each point. Very important. Every person who is looking for any kind of spiritual goal, spiritual practice, should think about these criterions, 10 points altogether. So, not because of repeated hearing. People believe a lot of things when they hear it again and again. So that's what the commercials are doing. If you are exposed to something again and again, unconsciously it gets into your mind. You believe it, you like it. Some advertisement, some commercial, they have big billboards on the side, both sides. You just drive past, you don't even really pay attention, but if you see it again and again quite a few times, it gets into your mind. You watch television, whatever. Not only religious ideas, any kind of idea can get into your mind and take hold of your mind, influence your behavior, influence your thinking, influence your likes and dislikes, influence your happiness and unhappiness also. Are we really free? How dangerous it is. We are exposed to so many things. Without knowing, these ideas get deep into our mind and we believe that we like it. We believe that it is true. How do we know whether it is true or not? So repeated hearing. We believe something because we hear it again and again. Not because of tradition. This is also very important. When you observe people, even yourself, maybe people here are more free and open in this country. But mostly, anywhere in the world, People believe something because it's a tradition. Tradition means your parents believe that, your grandparents believe that, your great-grandparents believe that, or your teacher believes that, your teacher's teachers believe that. So you think, oh, it must be true. They believe that. Even those old people who are so respectable, because they believe it, so it must be true, then I believe it. So, not because of tradition, not because of hearsay. Hearsay means somebody saying, somebody reporting, I have heard somebody said that. And he said that he really knows, but I heard from him. So second-hand knowledge, it means second-hand knowledge. A lot of what we believe is second-hand knowledge. Nor because it agrees with the text. Ah, that is very important. What does text mean? Any book. Any book means text. So when we want to find out whether something is true or not, we always give a reference. Oh, in such and such a text, a certain page number, and it says this. Any religious book, even Buddhist text, even Pali text, how do we really know that everything in the text is true? How do we know that nobody added anything? So, it might be Pali text, or it might be any other religious text, or it might be any other scientific text. These days, we believe so much in scientists. Oh, such and such a scientist, Nobel Prize winner, he said that. So it must be true, he knows. So the criterion of a truth cannot be proved that way. Especially when it comes to religious or spiritual practice. Nor because it is logical. Oh, this is also another very important point. Now, logic is human creation. Sometimes logic is ridiculous. Sometimes it makes sense. I mean, I use the word sometimes deliberately. Pay attention to this word sometimes. Sometimes it is okay. For example, let me give you an example. Let's say, how long would it take to build this house? 3 months? Let's say 3 months. How many people do you need to build this house to finish it in 3 months? Well, let's say a team of 20. Well, 3 months mean 90 days. If I give you 200 persons, can you finish it in 9 days? But logically, it's possible. Mathematically, you increase the amount of the number of people 10 times and reduce the time required by 10. What if I give you 2,000 people? Can you finish it in 1 day? Mathematically, it's okay. It becomes ridiculous then. It's logical, but not realistic. So another thing, logically impossible, but actually possible, is something from the science that I want to give you the example. Maybe some of you have heard about polaroid plastics. You know what polaroid means? It lets the light rays go through in a certain plane, in one plane only. For example, if the polaroid plastic is like this, it will allow light rays coming through like this, but not coming through like this. If this polaroid plastic is like this, it's like a slit like that. You put it on the window. So when you hold it like this, any light rays coming vertical cannot come through. But any light rays coming horizontally, it will come through. So what happens when you put one polaroid plastic like this and another polaroid plastic like this? What will happen? No light can come through, right? Logically perfect, but, and this is a very important but, if you put another polaroid, the third one, just like this, light rays can come through. Why? It was already closed, opaque. No matter how many layers you put again, it has to be opaque still, but no. If you really try it, you'll find that if you put another one, you can see through.
What is that? It doesn't make logically, it doesn't make sense. But that's the way it is. So I've read a lot of books on polarized plastics. Why? I want to know. And they explain that in mathematically many ways. But I cannot explain that now. But it doesn't make logical sense. So these days, we are trained to think logically. So whenever something does not fit into our way of thinking, we think that, no, this is not possible. So there are a lot of things in meditation practice which doesn't make logical sense. So when we meditate, we don't try to think logically. We just experience it. So when you come to meditation, you let go of logic. There are a lot of things in the nature, in the universe, which you cannot explain logically. And nor because of inference. Inference means philosophical method, like say Descartes' method, or systematic doubt. And he was a very doubtful person. Systematically, he thought through and proved something which is ridiculous. So if you read any philosophy, you'll find that the philosopher is trying to prove that his reasoning is really tight. And I read about many philosophers. For example, one was Bertrand Russell. I respect him very much. I read a lot of his books. Another one was his student who replaced him, Wittgenstein. And another person was A.N. Whitehead, who was Bertrand Russell's teacher in mathematics. So I read all three, philosophy. Three of them have three different conclusions. And all three of them claim that their thinking is really logical and tight. Why three different conclusions? If they can really think logically, they begin from one point and they have to end in the same point. Why three different points? Why three different conclusions? Very interesting. So, this is what it means. Nor because of inference, which means nor because of philosophical method. So, nor because of careful consideration of reason. Nor because of inference means you infer from something. Nor because of careful consideration of reasons. Nor because it conforms with your own view. So sometimes we have our own view. So when we meet another person expresses something which is the same. So we feel, oh yeah, you are right, I'm also right. We agree. When you find another person with whom you can agree, you feel that you are right and he is also right. But this is not the criterion for truth. Nor because of thinking this person appears to be trustworthy. This is another very important point. You know, we go and listen to big talkers who give Dharma talks or any kind of talks. We go and listen. We look up to them. Oh, this person has a lot of degrees. He is very learned. He has a lot of titles. So not because of thinking this person appears to be trustworthy. Only appears to be trustworthy, you don't really know. Sometimes we think that, oh, this person has a lot of followings. He has a lot of students, followers. He is the leader of a very big group. He's got many other groups in all over the world. He's a great teacher. And many of the leaders of the countries are his students. They follow him. They listen to him. They agree with him. So that way we think that this person must be true. What he is saying must be true. So many younger people think that way. When they have a lot of admiration for a person, they don't think anymore. They just believe everything. Nor because of thinking this recluse is our teacher. And here, the word recluse, you remember, it comes in the very beginning of the sutra. Indeed, the recluse Gautama. Buddha was also considered as erectus. So here this word is the same word coming again. Not because of thinking this recluse is our teacher. So that means just because somebody is our teacher, we shouldn't believe him totally. That is not the criterion for the truth. Even Buddha. Think about it. But when you karma must know by yourselves, so let's wait for a while and think about it again. Think about the Buddha's mind when he was talking about these things. Not to believe. So when I was young, a lot of people demanded me to believe them, but I refused. So I got in a very big conflict with a lot of people, a lot of my parents and relatives and teachers. So I was in a very difficult situation. When I read this, it made me feel very much better. And when I think about the Buddha, I went into the mountains and sat and read this book and slowly think about the Buddha. I didn't really know who the Buddha was. I was very young and only a beginner reading something. So I thought, this person, whoever this person who is called a Buddha, must be a very strong-minded person. He's not a weakling. He has a lot of inner power, a lot of inner strength, a lot of inner freedom. He is free to let another person investigate freely. Only a person who is free can allow another person to find out freely. If we feel weak inside, if we feel powerless, if we don't have inner strength, then we demand another person, you must believe me, otherwise. So if anybody demands another person to believe him totally, that shows that that person is weak. That shows that that person is not free. He has no freedom. That shows that that person is dependent on somebody who believes in him. He wants somebody to believe in him because he doesn't believe in himself. So if you really know the truth, and if you are really strong, if you are really independent, you don't demand anybody to believe you. You let that person to find out. So think of this Buddha's personality. A lot of time, even now, sometimes I read Dharma and meditate, sometimes I think of the Buddha, the mind of the Buddha, the freedom of the Buddha. So when I read these things, I thought, this is the person I can respect. Now I found a person I can respect. Although he has passed away a long time ago, mentally I can relate to him. I can respect him because everybody around me is forcing me to believe. Not giving me enough freedom to find out. They always tell me, how much do you know? You said you want to find out, how much do you know? Look, other person, they believe. So, better for you to believe. That's the way they think. That's their logic. So, it is really tremendous. Think about yourself. Can you allow somebody, maybe your family members, your sons or your daughters or your spouse or your brothers or your colleague, in your work, can you allow another person this kind of freedom? Maybe you know what is true, and that another person doesn't know what is true, but can you allow that person freedom to find out? Do you want to force your truth on another person? Can you respect another person's freedom? That is also another thing important. You know, when I read this sutta, I thought, this Buddha, he has respect for people. He respects humanity. That is why I respect him. Anybody who has no respect for me as a human being, no, I cannot respect that person. I refuse. I might be a very naive, ignorant person, but I need that respect to find out. Without that kind of respect, how can I find out? But even though nobody gives me any freedom, still it's my freedom. Up to me whether I believe it or not. So, if you really want to find out the truth, you need that sort of courage. I might make mistakes, but it is my freedom, and it is my responsibility to find out for myself. I cannot follow any leader blindly, because I hear again and again, many groups, so-called spiritual or religious groups, demanding their followers to do terrible things, and those followers did those terrible things. Again and again, every year, almost every year, I hear news like that. I felt very sad sometimes for those followers who've been forced to believe, who've been tricked to believe, or who've been hypnotized to believe. So you see, really, leaders can hypnotize you to believe in something. Very dangerous. You lose your freedom. In the name of spiritual practice, you do something very unwholesome, very painful, very disgraceful, very degrading. So maybe you have heard about some bad news last week. So you can guess that I'm still thinking about that. So these are very important things. So you are here to find out the truth, but what is truth? You are here to find the right way of practicing, but what is the right way? How do you know? Who's going to tell you? Not me. If you believe me, then you are not following this instruction of the Buddha. So think of the freedom and strength and power of the Buddha. If you are really powerful, you don't demand another person to submit to you. Total submission, Buddha never demanded that. So that is the criterion, I don't know another word for it, to test and see whether a person is powerful or not. Buddha was not dependent on his followers. He was not dependent on his disciples. He was not dependent on anybody. He was totally free. That's why he can allow everybody free. Find out for yourself. I'm not here to save you. You can save yourself. So, can you see the freedom here? How tremendous the freedom is. And can you bear that freedom? Because I've heard, actually I have that book, I haven't read it. Fear of Freedom. Eric, somebody, I forgot the name now. Well, maybe later I can tell you. Eric somebody. He wrote the book, Fear of Freedom. When we don't have freedom, we want freedom. But when we have freedom, we are afraid of it. Because with that freedom, we have tremendous responsibility. Now, you find out for yourself. I'm not going to tell you. How do you feel? So we, secretly, we expect somebody to tell us what is truth, what to do. And also, we resist that. So we are doing two things at the same time. We want somebody to tell us the truth, to tell us what to do, and at the same time, we are resisting that. We are rebelling that. And we like that, to rebel. If you have nothing to rebel, what are you going to do? So tremendous freedom and tremendous responsibility. Not easy thing to do. So this religious practice or this spiritual practice is great responsibility. You are responsible to find out the truth. So what do you think, Karl Marx? Think of it again. What do you think, Karl Marx? So Buddha said, these actions, when you, Karl Marx, know by yourselves, these actions are unwholesome, these actions are blameworthy, these actions are censured by the wise, these actions, if completely undertaken, lead to harm and pain, then you, Karl Marx, should abandon those actions. So Buddha was talking about actions. Pay attention to this word, action. He was not just talking about ideas. So actions are more important. What do you think? So this question is also very interesting. Buddha was asking, what do you think? So what does that mean? What does that question mean? That question means that you are free to think. You are free to answer your own question, this question. You are free to find out. which also means that I respect your how do I say that? I respect that you can find out. So a lot of respect. Buddha has a lot of respect for people. But what do you think, Kalamas? When greed arises in a person, does it arise for his benefit or for his harm? The question is quite simple, and the answer also is very simple. But apply that question and answer in your life. When you harm somebody, why? When you harm yourself even, why? Because of greed. But we don't really see it clearly. That's why we do it again and again, repeatedly. People are using drugs. They are harming themselves. And they are also harming others too. Why are they doing that? Because of greed. Even some people are greedy eating junk food. Why? Because they like the taste. It's not good for the health, but they like it. So when you think that, oh, now I'm busy and I'm so agitated and frustrated, I cannot meditate. Maybe later I'll meditate. You are making a very dangerous decision. Because when you're agitated, when you're upset, that is more important for you to meditate. Because that's when you make a lot of mistakes. So, let's go on. What do you think, Alamas? Are these actions wholesome or unwholesome? Beneficial or not beneficial? Beautiful or ugly? Useful or not useful? Unwholesome, venerable sir, very easy to answer actually. But look very deeply. Feel it when we are angry and when we do something that hurts ourselves or another. Look very deeply. If we pay attention, we will know that it is very unwholesome. It is very degrading. It degrades you. It brings you down. So we ourselves degrade ourselves. Nobody else can really do that. Are these actions blameworthy or blameless? Buddha asked, and they answered, blameworthy and unjust. Are these actions censured by the wise or approved of by the wise? Censured by the wise and unjust. Wise people never approve of something unwholesome. They will not go and really stop another person, but mentally, they will never approve. They will never say it's good to do. They might not be able to stop it. How does this appear to you? Do these actions, if completely undertaken, lead to harm and pain or not? How does it appear to you? So, this phrase, completely undertaken, means if you do that consistently, if everybody does that consistently, what will happen? The whole human society will break down. Now, this is what is happening. People are doing a lot of unwholesome actions. No matter how much we talk about peace, it will never happen if we don't pay more attention to our own mental states. So only by becoming more and more mindful and pay more attention to our mental states can we develop mindfulness and peace and freedom inside. When you have developed mindfulness and deep and clear understanding and freedom, if each of us do that, then the world will become a very peaceful place. Only with peace inside you can do something peaceful outside. If we don't feel peaceful inside, no matter how much we talk about peace, we will still harm another person. In many, many ways, in a very subtle ways also. So thus, this is what I meant when I said, come you Kalamas, not because of repeated hearing, not because of tradition, not because of hearsay, not because it agrees with the text, not because it is logical, not because of inference, not because of careful consideration of reasons, not because it conforms with your own view, not because of thinking this person appears to be trustworthy, not because of thinking this recluse is our teacher, but when you, Kalamas, know by yourself, these actions are unwholesome, these actions are blameworthy, these actions are censured by the wise, these actions, if completely undertaken, lead to harm and pain, then you, Kalamas, should abandon these actions. If you know, then you abandon. Then, so, think very deeply, you see. Somebody tells you, don't do this, and you obey that person. Okay, I won't do that. But you don't know that this is something unwholesome. Because you don't know, someday when there's nobody there to tell you not to do, you'll do it. You might do it. Because you don't really know. You might change your mind. And Buddha said the same thing with wholesome actions also. Even though something is wholesome, but you don't know. Somebody tells you or forces you to do this. Do this, this is good. And you believe that, and you obey that. Okay, I'll do that. Buddha said, no, that's not the right way to do it. First, you know that this is good, then do it. So these two are very important points. When you get a copy of this sutta, read it very, very slowly. Comparatively, read it again and again. And see very subtle distinctions Buddha made. So even though you are not doing unwholesome, something unwholesome, not doing it, but you don't know that it is unwholesome, there's a possibility that you will do it. Is that really clear? See? And even though if you don't know that something is wholesome, but you are doing it, somebody asks you to do that. You're doing it, you don't know. Someday you will stop doing it because you don't know. So only by knowing for ourselves that this is not good and this is good, you stop doing what is not good and do what is good. What do you think, Kalamas, when non-greed? So non-greed means generosity. Non-anger means loving-kindness, compassion. And non-delusion means paying attention, mindfulness, wisdom. So understand these things in this way. Because I don't think I have that much time to go through everything in detail. Non-hating, non-deluded. So here comes another important thing. We do that here regularly, almost every day. But we have to think about this again. This disciple of the Noble One, anybody who appreciate, understand, and practice the Dharma, being thus free from covetousness, free from ill will, free from delusion, with clear understanding and mindfulness. See, clear understanding and mindfulness. This is an important point. Only when we are mindful and clear, then we can see these things, understand these things. So with clear understanding and mindfulness, lives having pervaded one quarter of a with a mind possessed of loving kindness, and in the same way a second, a third, and a fourth. So it goes on and on like that. But the important point is, pervades one quarter with a mind possessed of loving kindness, which means this person is developing loving kindness or compassion. So the basic teaching of the Buddha is the key five precepts to understand greed, hatred, and delusion when it is happening to you, in you. And by understanding that, slowly and slowly, you overcome that. And also, loving kindness. Not hypothetical ideals. This is something we can do if we are willing to do. And we should do if we are really serious about spiritual practice. If we really respect ourselves, which is very important. If we really respect ourselves, this is what we should do. We are upgrading ourselves. We are developing our spiritual qualities. We are trying to do the best that we can, try to become the best that we can. We are trying to develop our best potentials. We are trying to realize our best potentials. This is what we are doing for ourselves. You are not practicing Dharma for anybody else. Not to please your teacher, not to please anybody. You are doing this for yourself. So by doing this, you respect yourself also. By not doing it, you cannot respect yourself. So Buddha talk about metta here. which is very important to practice. So, can anybody deny that practicing metta is not beneficial? Nobody can deny that. But very deeply, look very deeply, is there anybody you love unconditionally, even yourself? Easy to talk about, very difficult to practice. Is there anybody you can totally forgive? Completely, totally forgive. And accept that person just the way he or she is now. Is there anybody like that? We always have conditions. If so, we don't talk about all these things. And to this disciple of the noble ones, Kalamas, whose mind is thus free from enmity, free from pain, free from defilement. So when you practice like this for a certain amount of time, depending on how well you practice and how clearly you can see, your mind will become free from these things, free from enmity, free from pain, free from defilement, and pure. Your mind will become like that. So that is real happiness. You can see that you are developing your inner qualities. You are becoming a better person. You respect yourself more and more. You love yourself more and more. That is tremendous happiness. No other happiness, no other thing can make you so happy. So for this person, four consolations are obtained in this very life. Four consolations. What are these four? And these four points are also very, very interesting. So I'll read and explain briefly. If there is a future life, pay attention to the word if. If there is a future life after this one, and there is also result of good and bad actions, then I, after the breaking up of this body, after death, will get to a happy abode, the Deva world. This is the first consolation which is obtained by him. So if we have not done anything wrong, then when we die, if there's a future life, for somebody who has not done wrong, who has done something very good, life depends on that quality of mind. With a good quality, beautiful quality of mind, it cannot give result to a painful, ugly quality of life. The quality of our life is the reflection of our own mind. Actually, we create our own reality in a way. If we really know, we have some control. If we don't know, then there's no control. Not total control, but partial control. If you really know and develop your inner qualities, you find that you have quite a lot of control in your life. Even in this life, I know a lot of people, my friends, so to speak, my students, they practice meditation really honestly. They look really deeply into their heart. No matter what they are doing business, they always test themselves, am I being really honest? So that, by doing that, by living that way, they develop a lot of their good qualities and honesty also, and things in their life become easier and easier, simpler, simpler and simpler. Life becomes much easier. Life becomes very hard because we are not really honest, we are not really mindful. If we become really honest and mindful, life can be very easy and simple. So our life is the reflection of our mental state. So another point, if there is no future life after this one, and there is also no result of good or bad actions, we are doing some good actions, so let's say, but if there is no future life, and thus, therefore, we will not get any bad result or good result later, then in this very life, I keep myself free from enmity by doing good. Even in this life, we are free from enmity, because by harming another person, we create enmity. Free from oppression, free from pain, and happy. So those who are practicing mindfulness, developing loving kindness, developing compassion, and by practicing mindfulness, developing very clear understanding. They are happy here and now. They are benefiting from their own practice. They don't have to wait until the future life. If there is a future life or not, doesn't matter anymore. Because if there is a future life, because you are doing something very beneficial, and if this practice will benefit you in your future life, very good. No problem, you don't need to worry about that. If there is no future life, never mind, you are benefiting here and now. So, when you think about these two paragraphs, some people think that if there were no future life, then I can do anything. Because when I die, it's over, everything is over. But look at those people, are they really happy now? Can they really respect themselves? Do they get respect from other people? Respect, I mean, not doing like this, not bowing down. Really treating another person as a human being respectfully. So, whoever is doing unwholesome actions do not have any self-respect. They cannot respect themselves. And others who know what they are doing will not respect them. Even people who do not believe in goodness, deeply they respect those who are doing good. You try to find out people, the way people behave, you'll know that. If there is no evil done, when evil is done, then I behold myself truly pure in both cases. Some people say that even though if you do something good, it is not good at all, it doesn't mean anything. Even though if you do something bad, it doesn't mean anything. There's no such thing as good or bad. I hear ideas like that even today. People say that, oh, that is just the way you look at it. Nothing is really good or bad. Which is very foolish, actually. But, even if somebody say like that, and you do what is beneficial, useful, and you avoid doing what is harmful, you don't have to worry about anything. So try to find the safest way. If you think yourself as an intelligent and wise person, find the safest way to live your life. If there is evil done, when evil is done, then I don't perceive having done evil to anyone. So not having done evil actions, how will pain reach me? So these are the four consolations. By doing something good, you don't need to worry. Whether it brings result or not, doesn't matter. So, this is something I thought about when some of my friends also asked me. Quite a few of my friends are atheists. They don't practice any religious practice. And he said, how can you believe these things? How can you believe that there's nirvana? How can you believe that there's a future life? And some people ask me, how long do you need to practice to become enlightened? I said, why do you ask that question? He said, if I know that if I practice for a month or 2 months, I'll become enlightened, then I'll do it. But if I don't know, if there's no definite limit, then I don't want to waste my life, he said. Think of his logic. So I told my friend, even if there were no nirvana, even if there were no future life, even if wholesome or unwholesome action doesn't bring any result, I will still practice mindfulness, I will still try my best to be a loving person, I will still try to cultivate compassion, I will still want my mind clear and pure. Now, doesn't matter whether those things exist or not, because I find that when I'm mindful and clear, I'm very peaceful, I'm very happy. To be unmindful, to be agitated is so painful. And to be unloving, unkind, is also very painful. But please understand me, I make mistakes, even now. Sometimes, in some situations, although I can be more loving and compassionate, I refuse to do that. And many times I regret that also. Oh, I can spend 5 or 10 minutes with this person, and give him what he really needed. He wanted my attention. But I was too tired and I didn't want to pay attention to him anymore. I just avoid him. And I felt very unkind and also pain also. Oh, 5 or 10 minutes wouldn't really hurt me much. How come I couldn't give him that time and attention? So I want you to know that I'm not always kind. I'm not always loving. Many times I'm very cold. But anyway, you know, when I'm kind and loving and compassionate, I feel very happy, very happy. It makes me really happy. I really love it. So as a human being, we cannot be perfect. But although we cannot be perfect, at least we can be honest. By honest, I mean when you are not kind, it hurts you. It's very painful. When you are kind, it makes you very happy. It makes you a better person. You feel happy about it. Even though sometimes you get tired, later you feel happy about it. So all of us, try our best. Try to be more mindful, more sensitive, more clear. That will make us less egoistic, more compassionate. Then we can give more. So I'll leave some of the parts and go to the conclusion. It is wonderful, Venerable Sir. It is indeed wonderful. So you see, Buddha was very practical. He was not talking about this world or that world and demanding you to believe it. He was talking about something very practical. Keep the 5 precepts. Develop mindfulness. Develop loving-kindness, develop compassion. Understand greed, hatred, and delusion very deeply. By understanding, you will overcome. There's no other way to overcome greed, hatred, and delusion, or pride, envy, jealousy. So that's what we do here. We try to be mindful, to pay attention. So it is wonderful, Venerable Sir. It is indeed wonderful, Venerable Sir. Just as, Venerable Sir, one should turn up that which is upside down, or lay bare that which is concealed, or tell the way to one who has lost his way, or hold a lamp in the dark, so that those who have eyes might see things. Even so, the Dharma has been revealed to us in many ways by you, Venerable Sir. So we, Venerable Sir, go for refuge to the Blessed One, to the Dharma, and to the Sangha. May the Blessed One regard us as lay disciples who have gone for refuge from today onwards as long as our life lasts. So that's the conclusion. So I want to add a few points also. Last week I gave a very brief explanation about the Mahasatipatthana Sutta. So if you read Mahasatipatthana Sutta, in every paragraph you'll find one word coming repeatedly again and again. That word in Pali is Pajanati, which means you know. So gichantomiti pajanati. While walking, you know that you're walking. Which means you pay attention to your whole body and mind while you're walking. Briefly speaking. So while you are eating also, you pay attention to your body and mind. How are you eating this food? Just for the taste? With greed? Or with anger, or with delusion. And feelings and sensations also, pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings, pay attention. Buddha said, you know. All you need to do is to pay attention to whatever is happening now and know it as it is. You don't have to believe anything. Know things as they are. This is pleasant feeling. This is pleasant sensation. This is unpleasant feeling. This is unpleasant sensation. This is emotion. This is loving emotion. This is compassion. Whatever happens, look at it and see what it is. No belief, actually. Very practical, very simple. So the whole sutra uses this word. When greedy thoughts come, sāragama cittam, sāragama cittanti, prajānāti. Again, when greedy thoughts come, you know that this is a greedy thought. You know that. You don't control it. You don't accuse yourself. You don't feel unhappy even about it. Because if you feel unhappy about it, then you're upset. Being upset means anger, in a way. So even when that happens, you pay attention again. This is being upset. Being upset about being greedy. And being upset about being upset again. It can go on and on. So we are always reacting, reacting, reacting. But if you keep doing it, someday you might be able to wash it without reacting in any way. Then you can be very free to wash it. So freedom to learn is very important. You become free to wash. You don't get involved, you don't react anymore. So that is that kind of freedom, very important. So thank you for listening for so long, so attentively. I enjoy that also very much, in my own way. And there's another thing I want to talk about. There are some things in life you won't understand without experiencing them, and which do not come without effort. What could that be? It's meditation experience. Nobody can teach you. You have to practice it again and again. Become more and more mindful, and then you will experience it. What it means to be mindful, what it means to be free, what it means to be very clear, what it means to be to see things very clearly. So, there are some things in life you won't understand without experiencing them, and which do not come without effort. That's why Buddha said, be diligent. The whole day, from the time you wake up in the morning until you fall asleep, it's time to meditate. So try your best. First we learn to meditate in a certain place like this, in a special place, in a special posture. You sit very relaxed. You can put your hand any way you like. Keep your back straight but not really uptight. Straight and relaxed also. Try your best to sit straight and to feel relaxed as much as possible. And keep your head also, not like this or not bending backwards too much, just straight and relaxed. And very important to keep your hands very relaxed too. Some people, they press it or sometimes they do, they hold hands together very tightly. So don't make any part of your body unnecessarily tense. So, if you want to put your hands in your lap like this, just put it down, very soft, very light, no pressure, no stress. And keep your shoulders very relaxed because mostly we are very tight. We are holding up our shoulder. Some people have one shoulder up, another shoulder up, some both. And one person said, my shoulders are near my ears. So uptight, can't let down, let go. So, just let go and relax the whole face. It's very important to relax when you meditate. It's a relaxed effort. Keep your body relaxed, but keep your mind alert and on the object of your meditation as much as possible. So, our basic object of meditation is breathing. You may choose any other object if you like. Some people like to observe rising and falling of the chest or the abdomen. That's also okay. Anything happening in your body naturally is the object of your meditation. Whichever is more obvious, more predominant. And breathe in very deeply. Breathe out deeply for a few times. If you breathe in deeply for a few times, it makes your mind also very clear. And pay attention to the air touching near the nostrils, at the opening of your nose and near the upper lips, near this area, like a triangle, near your nose, and feel the air touching, feel the coolness of the air coming in, and feel the warmness of the air going out. So to feel it, not to think about it. So let's do that now. And every now and then, go through your body from your head to toes and experience any kind of sensation. Pay attention to any kind of sensations. It might be hot in some places, it might be tight in some places. So find a suitable position in which you can sit for a long time without moving. Because at least we need to sit for about 15 or 20 minutes without moving. Some people become very restless. Because they are restless, they move about very too much. Not because of pain, because of restlessness. So when you have found a suitable posture, breathe in deeply, breathe out deeply, pay attention. So let's do that for a few minutes, because we have come to the time to finish it. But never mind, if you are willing, we can go on sitting for a long time. So let's begin that now. Breathe in deeply, breathe out deeply. As you breathe out, relax your whole body. Breathe in, breathe out, let go, relax your whole body.